Welcome to an episode of Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where a trainer and trainee talk about herbal medicine and fitness.
We're your hosts. My name is Danielle Kreese, and I'm a certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. And we also have Paula Kirsch, who's an artisanal herbalist and owner of Botanically Curious. So let's go ahead and start the show.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back to another episode of Bands and Botanicals. Today we have a special guest, Christy McCart, and I'm really excited to dive in and talk a little bit about her experience on The Biggest Loser, which is really cool.
Special guest. How are you doing today, Christy?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much calling in from Tampa. So we're just briefly speaking beforehand. We have that little Florida connection, me being from Miami, her being from Tampa. So I'm actually a little envious of what I'm assuming your weather is like right now.
You know, we have a cold front coming through, and by cold front, I mean it's 71 degrees.
Lucky. I remember those days. Oh, God, I'm actually dreaming about that right now. It's been a little rainy here, but I'm channeling your 71 degrees as I go into the rest of my day.
I'll send that positive and good energy and juju your way of good weather.
Thank you.
So, Christy, you are a lawyer, a wife, a mother, I'm sure a bunch of other things, you know, powerhouse.
Biggest Loser contestant.
Of an awesome lady. Yeah. And we really appreciate you being on the show today. So first what we'll do is we'll pull our oracle card for the day. And interestingly enough, talking about Florida and marshy landscapes and things like that, we pulled cattails. And so some interesting things people might not know about cattails. You know, those are those interesting grass-like things that are growing out of marsh areas with this sausage-like kind of
rhizome. Looks like a corn dog.
Right, on the top. That's a good way to describe it. But actually, the property that it holds is build, because other than just being, you know, the leaves and things are used to weave baskets, they've been used for seating, roofing, insulation. Animals like muskrats and beavers and things actually use these too to build their homes. So it is a really perfect fit for the plant to be something. It's kind of like a building material for nature, which is kind of neat. But the really neat thing here about this one is that the focus of it is actually on immediate goals. So we're not just talking about building materials, obviously. We're talking about building up toward a goal, building things, putting things together, you know, to meet those goals, to build a better future for yourself, which is really nice.
I would say that ties into our conversation today pretty well.
Yeah, you know, strengthening foundations for the future. And then also building legacies, relationships, and the foundation of strong home is some really interesting things that this card has offered us today. So that's kind of neat.
So would you say that that concept of building and building those goals in the future and building a strong home and relationships, were you able to find a lot of that kind of in your journey, Christy, because it was this past year that you were competing on The Biggest Loser, correct?
Yeah, it was. We filmed the finale a year ago this week. Wow. So it's been right at about 365 days that my journey came to a conclusion.
Yes. Wow. And I'm sure I've read some of the things that you've written, and you've built a bunch of relationships, you know, that you've been able to maintain with your coaches and stuff from the show as well, correct?
Absolutely. I think when you go into a situation like leaving your entire family and friends and support system at home, and you are thrusted into this environment of isolation, but complete exposure, you are forced to rely on those that are going through the same thing with you. You know, it's, you become thick as thieves because, you know, misery loves company, but also it's very reassuring to know that you're not the only one that feels uncomfortable or out of place. And that's what happened with me, at least, and a lot of the contestants on the show, is we just leaned into each other and we had to build our own support system when our typical support system was not there. And we, you know, you didn't have phone calls home or any way to communicate with them other than the two brief moments I got while the show was filming. And so
right.
You have to build your connectivity and your new support system with those around you. And that's kind of what we did.
Wow.
That sounds like such an intense and obviously incredible, but incredibly challenging mm-hmm. experience. And I loved how you put that in the kind of the combination of isolation and complete exposure. I mean, you're so vulnerable to everyone. I mean, not even just the immediate right. people around you, but you're opening yourself up to the world. And I mean, for that, like, I think we both have to say congratulations to you absolutely. For that, because
that's definitely brave, especially in a world of social media and everything else, to put yourself out there and to know that it's not going to be an easy journey and to let people see those struggles and things. It's really, really brave.
Yeah. I think going into it, I never intended to come out as a TV personality or a reality TV personality or anything like that, because at the end of the day, I have way too much on my plate to ever even consider that to be a career choice. But I think that I people that know me know that I don't mince words very much, and I'm kind of like, take it or leave it. I try to be respectful in all things that I do, but I try to do it with a complete honesty. I don't expose every aspect of my life. I'm kind of a private person. But if I'm going to go on a show where my intent is to rebuild myself from the inside out, I'm not going to waste the opportunity by putting on a facade or spewing out any sort of BS. It's going to be the true authentic me, so that I can get down to the true authentic of reason why I felt the need to come there and why I felt the need to change my life. And so I've kind of carried that through my entire life, but I made sure to be consistent with that while on a platform, a reality TV show.
Wow.
Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, I think about even just making a post on social media, and there's so many times where I'll go to post something vulnerable and honestly, mm-hmm. I'll like delete everything mm-hmm. I wrote. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it takes an incredible strength. I think so many people are grateful to you for that. And to, you know, your fellow contestants as well for taking that leap and having people join you along on that journey. Cause I can imagine it's not easy.
Honestly, though, I'm in this nice, sweet spot where I have people who look to me for inspiration, words of encouragement, a dose of reality check of like, hey, none of us are perfect and mm-hmm. life could be messy and gross or whatever. But I'm not to the point where I have trolls and people coming after me. I would say 99.9% of my social media experience and interaction has been 100% positive. That's and awesome. I am probably a minority in that, and I'm thankful for that, because I don't have time for that crap.
No.
If you don't like it, keep moving, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I have found that majority of the people that interact with me on the social media platform are women, typically age 25 and 45. They're on their own sort of journey. I mean, mm-hmm. they relate to, I'm a busy mom and I'm constantly putting everybody else in front of me mm-hmm. and it leaves very little time for me. I'm constantly pouring from my cup, but I don't give myself the time to refill it. And we're all just kind of in the trenches together. And, you know, nothing is worse than feeling like you're out on a stranded island with no one around you. And if it's someone like me or someone else on there that's like, listen, I'm on an island next to you. I don't know how I get from my island to your island, but we're going to try to get back to the main shore. Yeah. Our boat might have holes. We might not have oars. We might have to get out and push the boat and kick behind us, but we're going to make it somehow, some way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Again, misery loves company, and to feel like you're not alone is valuable, and it can get you through some tough times. And so that's what I have behind me, and I feed off of that, and I think they feed off of me, and it's a really mutually beneficial relationship that I found from social media.
That's beautiful. It, like you said, I don't think that's what people find all the time. So, I mean, I guess you attract what you put out, and you're attracting such positive, you know, wonderful energy, and I'm happy that that's meeting you in the same place. And I actually wanted to follow up with one of the things you were just talking about, how, you know, especially as a mother, and Paula's a mother as well. I'm not, but I feel fairly busy in my life as well. And, you know, you spoke about how you constantly are taking care of others, but you don't make the time to take care of yourself. And I feel like a lot of the conversation these days is understanding the importance of mental health and of self-care and how self-care is kind of transitioning away from this idea of being selfish into something being beneficial for not just the person inducing the self-care, but for everyone around them. And I just wanted to ask you kind of what some of your favorite self-care practices were and how you kind of pushed past those feelings maybe of guilt when you do give yourself time.
Mm-hmm. So it's funny that you said that about self-care. And I think, you know, in 2020, there's been a whole lot of buzzwords thrown around, COVID and quarantine and isolation and, you know, all these things. But I feel like self-care has really been a push for 2020. And it's the way that we've all kind of gotten through is, hey, listen, let's try to find the silver lining. Do we have more time for self-care? And if not, we need to make that a priority for 2020, but all the years to come.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, self-care, I didn't even have an idea of what self-care was before I went on the show. But now walking away from it and having the moment of 2020 of, listen, we have so much out of our control in our lives that we can control this little bit of time that we can give back to ourselves and we can fill up our cup again. And I never had that imagery before going on the show and really taking a moment to say, what do I need in my life to feel like I'm whole, to feel like that I can give my best self to my spouse, to my child, to my family, to my coworkers, to myself. And for me, I have found that it's working out. And if you had asked me that 2 years ago, that would not have been my answer.
Mm-hmm.
But really feeling like my body's in motion and it's waking up every day with the intent to say, hey, listen, I know my day might go to crap. I don't know what's coming my way, but I've woken up with the intent of starting it out with good intention and moving my body. Mm-hmm. And then I know that I did something for myself, regardless of whatever comes my way. And because I'm that type of person, I need to work out in the morning because I'll find excuses not to work out later. I'll find, oh, I need to do laundry. Oh, or I need to work a little bit more, or right. Oh, I need to go grocery shopping. And if I don't prioritize that 1 hour in the morning, the rest of my day feels off and I feel off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's finding what it is that gives you centers you and gives you that peace. And for me, I know it's that working out. And I know specifically, I can't go more than 2 days without working out. And I know even more specifically, I have to work out on Friday because there's a higher likelihood that I won't work out on Saturday or Sunday. And then I've hit that 2 day period of not working out. And so it takes a lot of trial and error. It took me 10 months to figure out that specific thing that I know if I give myself 60 minutes of working out 5 days a week, at least the rest of my day will go well. And I know I need 2 days, no more than 2 days without working out. And I know I have to work out on Fridays, and it's just trial and error. And for some people that might be meditating. I talk too much. I can't sit still enough to meditate. That's not my thing. Some people it's, you know, going to see a therapist. I do see that, but I don't do it on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I feel like working out, I'm rambling now, but working out was my thing now.
So, you know, before all of this happened, it sounds like it's really changed a lot in your life. You know, if you don't mind sharing, you know, and that's okay if you don't, what really was the breaking point for you to decide to go on the show, to take this big step, to really change a lot of those things in your life to make sure that you were making time for yourself?
So I can remember it was last May and my son had just turned 1 year old and I went to an appointment and I stepped on the scale and I weighed more on the scale at that moment, 1 year postpartum, than I did the day I walked in to the hospital to give birth to him. And I thought, what the heck am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
I said, my husband and I, we had fertility issues having my son. And I remember thinking, I worked and spent so much time and effort to get my son here.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not putting in the same effort to stay here with him?
Wow.
And
it just gave me the chills.
I know, me too.
But it's completely, again, it's that completely vulnerable, honest of get your stuff together because he deserves a mom who is happy and wants to be there, who talks kindly to herself, who projects an image of and a truth of someone who's worth, you know, taking up space in this world. And I know that I was worth taking up space. I knew that I was all these other things. I was kind. I was generous. I was caring. I was a good mom. but I wasn't telling those things to myself 100% across the board. I would still say, I'm a good mom, I'm all these things, but I don't get on the floor and play with my son. Mm-hmm. But I don't, I'm avoiding and altering my life so that I don't have to sit in a swing and have it dig into my hips. Like, why won't I go do that? Well, because of my weight. I'm tired of modifying my life and modifying my son's life in theory. I don't need to do that anymore. I can take control. And it was just this wake up call of, you can do better and you should do better.
Wow. That's very powerful. Well, mm-hmm. I just keep, just have so much respect for you in this journey that you've been on. And, you know, you were just, again, piggybacking off of what you were just talking about. I was reading another thing that you wrote and you were talking about a list that you had made 4 years ago of what you wanted in your life. And I've done something similar, and I've seen other people do similar things. And you were talking about how you made this list and you actually were thanking the person you were at the beginning of those 4 years and throughout those 4 years. And you actually inspired me to talk about this in a bootcamp class that I taught this morning. So thank you. Because I just thought it was such a powerful thing to do, because so often we only thank the person, or we only thank ourselves once we've reached the goal. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just like, oh yeah, like now I could feel worthy of like thanking myself because I got to X, Y, and Z at this certain point that I had in my mind for where I wanted to be physically or mentally or whatever the case is. And I just wanted to actually just take a moment to reflect on how powerful you taking time was to thank who you were at the beginning of the journey. And do you think it's through this process that, again, allowed you to reflect and want to thank that woman who was there at that place 4 years ago? Because it seems like you wouldn't have thanked her 4 years ago.
Yeah, when I made that list, I want to say in 2015 or 16, and I remember it being one of my low points of, gosh, like I'm just really unhappy. And if I had it in my dream world, what would my life look like? And I remember they were just little simple things like, you know, I want to be able to sit at a movie theater and not worry about somebody sitting next to me, or sit on a plane and not worry about the passenger next to me think that I'm spilling over into their seat. Or, you know, I want my husband to be able to wrap his arms around me and his hands to touch. Mm-hmm. Just little tiny things. And the problem was, is I did nothing to try to achieve those goals. I did nothing to make myself better and take the step forward at that time. And I think it's honest. I don't think I was ready for it. I don't think I would have appreciated all of the hard work that would go into changing myself physically, but emotionally and mentally. And so I just made the list and it sat in my phone for years. Mm-hmm. But going through the hard work that it takes to transform your life, not just physically, it starts with an emotional and a mental awareness of what was going on at the time that got you to your worst place. Mm. And you don't just, you know, you can't just get from point A to point Z and not go through B through Y, right? You know? And you do get to a point, and it might not be right away. It might be when you hit your first milestone or your 10th milestone where you say, holy crap, that person that I was, that I decided needed to do better, that person took the first step. That person then took the second and the third and the fourth step. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That person 4 years ago didn't even take a single step. So you need to go back and thank that person who took that first step, because she continued to take the step after step that got you where you are today.
Preach. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God. That resonates so much. It resonates so much. And you probably aren't aware of this, but some of our listeners, Paul is one of my clients. And mm-hmm. I don't know, I hope that she could tell you that as a trainer, and I hope that you experience this with your trainers as well, and the trainers that you've had since the show as well, Christy. And I know that it's been COVID, so that may have been a little weird, but just, you know, the importance of the mental health and that it's not just the physical is really great and wonderful and necessary, but you also need to do it for your mind and for your heart. And yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, going back to the show and kind of a lot of what you're saying is for those listeners and for us to really just say it out loud is really inspiring. But while you were on the show, did you feel like your experience was with the trainers and everything else really helped you to keep that mindset long term? Did they really allow you to like gain some tools, or how exactly did that work out?
So a lot of the show is obviously production, and they can't fit an entire week's worth of work in a 44-minute episode. Mm-hmm. But what you didn't see is that on weekends, we would meet with a licensed psychologist who her profession is she worked as a bariatric therapist. So she would do the evaluations, the pre and post evaluations for individuals who were thinking and considering to do bariatric surgery. Wow. And so she had a history of working with people who were morbidly obese typically, and making sure that, listen, you can lose 20 pounds, you can lose 100 pounds, you could, you know, work out every day, 10 hours a day, you could go and have your stomach resized or stapled or whatever. But if you don't address what got you to this place to begin with, you will go right back there.
Right.
And I had always heard that. I had heard people talking about it, but I never truly understood it until I sat down with a therapist who started connecting the dots for me. Because we don't all get here by happenstance, right? You can make good decisions, you can make bad decisions, but eventually they start to snowball, and your life is a web of interconnected choices and right. life circumstances. And it wasn't until those lines and dots were connected for me that I thought, holy cow, I might have the motivation to lose weight now. Maybe I want to grow my family, whatever the case may be, but I have to create habits that are going to get me through the day when my motivation isn't there. And to create those habits, I need to understand why I do the things that I do and how to correct that behavior to create new habits.
Nice.
Wow. And what I realized from the multiple hours of therapy while I was on the show, but then the continued therapy every week since the show has concluded, is that your childhood, regardless of whether it was great, it was mediocre, or it was terrible, is going to have a lasting impact on you, and you might not be aware of it. And so for me, I had issues with food growing up. I had food insecurity. I had poor examples of how to eat. I was a child that went through every single family law issue you could think of. And now it wasn't until I was on the show that I sat back and I thought, that's probably why I'm a family law attorney. Mm-hmm. That's probably why I have such a terrible relationship with food. I never had a good example, and I'm concerned, and I get anxiety about food, and when my next meal is going to be, where did that come from? Oh, that came from your childhood. And you just start connecting the dots, and it helps you understand what your natural behavior is, so that then you can address it and try to move and pivot from that to create a new healthy habit.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that was actually going to be one of our next questions, was really, you know, with so much diet culture that negatively affects people's mindsets about food, you know, how has your relationship with food really changed? And you know, a lot of people are scared of certain food groups, they're scared of certain things. Do you find that that's still the case with a lot of what you do?
So I still have issues with food, and I've gotten better, but I have triggers. We all have triggers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's food related. A gym could be a trigger for some people, you know, driving in a car could be a trigger for somebody because they got in a bad car accident. Everybody has that thing that might spark some sort of anxiety or uncomfortable feeling. And for me, I learned that it's an empty fridge and not having a plan for what my next meal is. Mm. And if I open up my fridge and I see that it doesn't feel full, I like start panicking. I'm like, all right, when am I going to go to the store next? What am I going to do? And then that panic rolls into, I don't know what to do. And I just start snacking at that point.
Right.
And I think a lot of people have emotionally tied snacking or overeating, and or whether it's a binge or whatever the case may be. And so I'm still dealing with that of like, okay, let me acknowledge the feeling. What is it rating on a scale of 1 to 10? Tell me why this is a reasonable fear and why it's an unreasonable fear. And then I move towards, all right, what can I do now that's tangible that can relieve that feeling. And then I go through, oh, okay. And now I'm better. So for me, you know, that's what I learned in therapy, is that you have to acknowledge those feelings that you have, but then you need to work through and have a formula of how to calm yourself down. So I stare at an empty fridge and I think, oh gosh, I'm going to starve. I don't know what I'm going to eat next. I'm going to binge. I'm going to lose everything that I've worked towards. I'm going to be back at 264 pounds plus some, and it just spirals, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm at a 9 out of 10. And then I think, all right, Christy, do you have resources to go and grocery shop? Yes. Can you make a meal plan so you know exactly when you're going to eat next and what meals you're going to make? Yes. Is that something you can do within the next couple hours? Yes. Okay. If you had a plan in place, you went grocery shopping, you had your meals in place and you filled your fridge, would you feel better? Yes. All right. Now that I have that plan, okay, I feel kind of at like a 3 out of 10. Okay. Yeah. I can do this. And it's having these small conversations with yourself. I think people get on their own, you know, single line loop feed where they just keep telling themselves over and over again, that's going to be right, good, bad, and it could be unreasonable. So you have to kind of have outside voices, I think, give you some feedback so that you can become your own positive loop of, okay, it's not as bad. We are uncomfortable, but we're going to sit with this uncomfortable feeling. We have to acknowledge it, and then we're going to move past it. And so I still have issues with food, but it's gotten better. And I, you know, I'm not perfect by any means, but, you know, it's just acknowledging your uncomfortable feelings and knowing, for me, I know I have foods that are like my triggers. I have no off switch with some foods. So I have to avoid them completely, because if I take one bite of, like, let's say, like an apple pie or a cobbler or mashed potatoes. I love all forms of potatoes.
Yeah.
there's no off, but I cannot physically stop.
Right.
And so that's in kind of my toolkit of, all right, you have to avoid these, or you can only put so much, and then you have to either throw the rest away or put it away, give it away, so you don't have it in the house because you will eat it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, that could be a beneficial tool, I think, for some people, is bringing maybe the thing you wanted to enjoy into the house for the time that you want to enjoy it, but not always having it on hand.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And you know, I love how this journey has also been so mental for you, and that tool that you just spoke of, I mean, to kind of retrace your steps and kind of backpedal a little bit and find the origin maybe of why you're starting to feel that, and take those tangible steps. So I think that's something that could help, wow, just so many people. And kind of with that being said, I know that you had come off of the Biggest Loser, which, you know, is somewhat of a controlled environment where you have your trainers and maybe help with your meals and everything. And then you were thrown into quarantine, right? Because COVID hit in around the same area or briefly after you left the Biggest Loser?
It's interesting that you bring that up, because the Biggest Loser contestants, we've essentially been in quarantine and in hiding since August of 2019.
Oh, I guess that's true. You had some practice.
That's what's the crazy thing about it, is we've never actually had our like coming out moment of where we can know what it's like to feel and be in a real world setting, because we were in hiding. We couldn't show ourselves because it obviously ruined the finale. That didn't air until the end of March of 2020. And we went on lockdown March 13th, 2020.
Yeah.
So we never, ever really got to come out of hiding. And we've been constantly kind of just in our house. And I'll tell you, there's nothing scarier than going back into the place and the same walls that got you to your most unhealthy place.
Right.
And expecting that everything's going to be different, because it's not. And when you go on this journey to better yourself, whether it's emotionally or physically or mentally or financially, whatever, your relationships change with people, and you can't expect them to want to change with you, and you just have to adapt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Paula and I have spoken about things like that. We had a holiday episode and just kind of, what do you do? Obviously this year was a little different for people in regards to seeing family maybe, but what do you do when you do go into a setting around family or friends and they expect you to act one way, but you are trying to make changes for yourself? And, you know, it's, you have this discomfort, I guess, but it's establishing some kind of boundary for, because it's for yourself, for your betterment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So what, I guess my question is, how did you get through that? I mean, I know that you were used to the quarantine, but it must have been a little different, like you said, going from the environment of The Biggest Loser, even if you guys were kind of in like a isolated setting, to back to the place that, you know, may have had those triggers that you were speaking about before. So I know you've spoken about some of your tools, but if you could even just take a moment to kind of elaborate on that transition or kind of some of the challenges you faced and how you overcame them. It may be stuff you already spoke of, but it just sounds like mentally even more challenging than I think what all of us went through, where we just fell into it and kind of had to deal with it. You were like trying to start a whole new life and having to deal with it.
I'm not going to say that my uncomfortableness or transition was any harder than anyone else's, because it's all relative, right? Everybody's heart is different. Mine was unique, obviously, because of trying to find a new life while now being forced inside the house. My gym's closed. Some of the food you want to find is actually sold out. Right. You know, it was like, what's going on? And I spiraled a little bit. I have no problem admitting that. I'm like, what the heck? I didn't work out from March to May. Mm. The gym shut down. Mm-hmm. I felt very unmotivated. I'm like, you know, just like, I feel like, ugh, like what is going on in the world? I don't know. I don't even know. Like it took me to a place of, I knew this was too good to be true. Mm, you lose all this weight. It's too good. You don't deserve to keep it off. Like, you don't deserve to feel good in your own skin. Like, obviously this is the universe telling you like, ha ha, joke's on you. Uh-huh. And it's a really uncomfortable place to be. But, you know, with the help of the contestants that went through it with me and, you know, my loved ones around me, it's like, no, Christy, like, mm-hmm. you're only feeling that way because that's how you're talking to yourself right now.
Right.
You have the ability to change things and take control. And it was going back to my toolkit of, okay, if I'm a pendulum and I'm a very imagery type of person, if I'm a pendulum right now, I feel like I'm swinging from one extreme to the other. And I feel most comfortable close to center, just back and forth, back and forth. Mm. So how am I going to do that? How am I going to find my center again? And for me, it was creating my list of go-tos, like my quick list of the top five things that I need to do to help me find center. And one of the easiest thing is, all right, I have to get up and move once a day, even if it's for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I have to have breakfast every morning. Just start having breakfast. Three, drink at least a gallon of water a day.
Mm.
Four, go to bed at a set time. And then five, reach out to one person that will help and give you positive reinforcement, whoever that could be. Huh. And so when I'm feeling like I'm starting to swing one way or the other extreme, I just start at the top of that five list and I work my way down.
Nice. Very cool. Well,
and it helps you focus your energy on it's, you know, when you feel like you have to do all these things and you have to do them all right now to be successful. No, that's crap.
Yeah.
That is crap. Just do what you can do. And the smaller things it is, the smaller number, I think it's the better, because you can define your success on one thing of, guess what, guys, today I got up and I moved, or guess what, today I drank a gallon of water and I didn't do that yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's the step in a positive direction. And you just have to build that momentum, because like I said, it's that first step. And then you get momentum after that first step to get to a second step or a third step. And it's just a snowball effect.
I love that, because, you know, it sounds like there's a lot of organization in your self-talk, in your mindset, in your visualization, but really leveraging those strengths that you probably already had in that capacity and just applying it to something new like this. You know, that's really something that everybody, you know, if they just visualize things, if they're focusing on that positive self-talk, if they're leveraging, okay, maybe I'm not good in this area, but I know my strengths are here. How can I leverage those for something else? And, you know, we know that on the show, you had some injuries and some other things that came up.
Physical ailments.
Yeah. You know, which is, for someone who is starting on this journey, you know, back where you were, who maybe isn't moving a lot, who is inspired by this, hearing what you're talking about, and they want to get going, but then they get injured, you know, what types of things did you do to keep moving forward after an injury, maybe figuring out how your body would move so you're not re-injuring yourself. You know, are there any things that you might be able to share with us?
Sure. I'm not obviously a certified personal trainer or any sort of, kinesiologist or any, that's a big word. but it's all, anything, almost everything in life can be modified. Mm-hmm. You know, if I learned anything, if you watched the show, one of my teammates, Terry, broke her ankle and still beat me on weight, losing weight week after week for, I think, 3 weeks. And you know, I had knee injuries, so it required me that I couldn't put a lot, I couldn't do a lot of jumping and running, but guess what? I could still walk, and to get a good sweat, I could do an incline versus high impact running, or I could do more upper body, or I could do, you know, butt, because your glutes are such a huge muscle group. All right, let's work out the glutes, because I'm going to burn a really good, get a really good burn with that and work those muscles. And so it's just finding that modification. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you have a lot of ailments, the easiest thing for you to do is swim, You don't have a lot of impact on your body. You can, you know, build some lean muscle doing that, and you get a really good workout in the pool. So, this is outside of my wheelhouse of what you can do, but I know we would go to the pool on weekends and try to get a good burn because of Terry's ankle and when I had knee injuries.
I second that for sure. Mm-hmm. I think the water is so incredible. I was in a really, really bad accident and I couldn't weight bear for a really, really long time as well. And the pool was kind of my sanctuary, I guess.
Yeah.
In a certain capacity. And at the same time, it provided a really incredible workout because it was still different from what I was used to. So, you know, you're being kind to your body, but you're still kind of getting, like you said, that extra bit of burn, that extra little cardio burst, and that modification. Yes, I am personal trainer and modifying everything. It's possible. When I was in this accident, I was modifying things on my walker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just gives you, like you said, if I can't use this muscle, then maybe I could build up on this muscle. You know, it gives you an opportunity to focus on another part of the body for a little bit. And it is, though, it is hard to have that mentality. So give yourself, you know, that congratulations again, because for so many people, you get injured and then you get frustrated. And then when you do go back to the gym, you fear getting injured, so you don't move the same way, and it becomes kind of this cycle and this mental battle of getting back into it. So, yeah, I mean, it sounds like, because I know that in the past there were some criticisms with The Biggest Loser and how, you know, I guess they pushed to the max and because it was a competition. And it really sounds like from what you're saying that with this season that you were in, there was a lot of focus like on your mental health and on that support so that you guys can be successful in so many different ways at the end of the show.
You know, there was criticism, and I was very concerned going on the show again that it might be more of the same. And I wasn't on past season, so I don't know what actually occurred, but I can talk about my experience that never once did I feel like I was put in harm's way, that I was working out too much or that I wasn't eating enough. I mean, we worked with a licensed dietitian who we had after the show, who I continue work with.
And
I'm going to do monthly Instagram lives with her starting January 1st. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm going to try to share that with as many people that follow me. If they want insight, like they can talk to her too. We're going to go live. But I never felt like it was, hey, just, you know, lose a bunch of weight and then we're going to be done with you. And I actually told them in the casting, I said two things. First and foremost, if you are just going to see how much I can lose in 12 weeks and then push me on my way and not address other issues, don't pick me. I'm not going to be on the show. That's not what I'm for, because at the end of the day, you're setting me up for failure, because I want to be a success story where I lose the weight and I keep it off and I continue my healthy lifestyle. And if that's not what you want, don't pick me. And then the second thing I said is, here's the thing, is you get one chance at putting me on your show, because I'm so fed up now. I'm either going to do it with a healthier show or I'm going to do it on my own. And if you have another season, I'm not going to be eligible anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what it comes down to, is when you get to a point when you're just tired of your own BS. And that's where I was. Yeah. I'm like, I'm tired of my own BS because I'm my worst enemy. Like, I know what I need to do. Mm-hmm. I know that it's going to be hard work, but I just don't want to do it. And I'm at the point I'm ready to do it with or without the show. And I think that's the turning point when people get tired of their own BS. That's when real change can start.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah, me too.
You know, talking about a lot of those struggles and the show itself, and for those who even just watch the show, it's interesting to see the disconnect with people, because it's been on for 18 seasons. People know that these people go through such an interesting change. But for you going through it, do you have any like greatest physical achievements that you'd like to share, or things other than just like weight loss itself? Yeah. You know, favorite moves, anything that was not a weight-based
something goal. Off the scale. Yeah.
That you
absolutely. And it's funny, something off the scale, because I always say I carry around my tool belt, or my toolbox. I can't even talk. So I carry around my toolbox, right? And in my toolbox, I have all these measures of success. One can be a scale, obviously. If that's your goal, that your short-term goal of, hey, I want to lose X amount of pounds, or I want to gain X amount of pounds in muscle, because that's a real goal of people. Mm-hmm. Or if it's a measuring tape that you want to lose inches, or you want to gain inches somewhere, I have that. You know, it's, I have this goal pair of pants or a dress that I want to fit in, and that's my toolbox. Or if it's my emotional gauge, engaging, you know, how I'm feeling and focusing on my mental health that week, or if it's my meal plan and seeing if I'm filling that out and planning ahead, you know, trying to live a healthy lifestyle is an active job. Mm-hmm. And it's actually more work for me to want to live healthy and choose to live healthy than it was, you know, before I went on The Biggest Loser.
Yes.
And so having that toolbox is a huge achievement that I didn't have before. But off the scale, an achievement for me was, one, I can sit in, you know, movie theaters, I assume, I haven't been back, and feel comfortable. My husband can put his arms around me, and every time he hugs me, I inevitably think about myself 5 years ago of, this is what you wanted. Mm-hmm. This is what you wanted, and you can feel it. Like, you can physically feel the tangibleness of the warmth of his hands on your back, his fingers interlocking, that you've never felt even when you guys got married 10 years ago.
Wow.
You know, it's the fact that I look at myself in pictures now and I don't immediately go to, oh my gosh, you're disgusting, or, oh, look at your double chin, or whatever I would say to myself before. It's that when I was in the courtroom before, I used to think, oh, they're just looking at me and saying, why is she even worth being here? Like, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And having confidence when I walk into a courtroom now, mm-hmm. or I appear virtually, like, no, I deserve to be here. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. And I feel good about myself. And I know I'm smart. And I know I'm going to do a job because I've done all this other work on top of what you normally do. And like, mm-hmm. so like, it's just that confidence that like, you can conquer the freaking world. Like, you went on national television, you lost 73 pounds, you left your newborn, your 1-year-old child, and your husband for 4 months. You did the damn thing.
Yeah,
like,
you did.
You were worthy, you know? And so you can't put a value on that.
No.
You can't put a value on appreciating the space that you fill.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's beautiful.
And also I ran a 10K and I'm going to try to run a half marathon this year.
That's nice.
I never would have done before. So,
fantastic. Oh man. Well, I follow you now and I cannot wait to see that happen because it sounds like it's going to happen no matter what. So is running like your favorite form of movement now, or do you have a favorite form of exercise?
My favorite form of movement, I like running, but I really like rowing.
Mm.
Rowing, because it's an all body workout.
It is. Oh, I trained Paula actually before our podcast, and I had her on the rower.
Yes,
and
I love it.
It is hard work, and it is, you know, it actually hits, from what I'm told, 84% of the muscles in your body.
I believe it.
I believe it. I will tell you, that was my form of cardio when I hurt my knee. Mm-hmm. Is I would do rowing, and Terry, when she broke her foot, she and I were on the rowers every night, just rowing, rowing, rowing. And we joked that we're like, we're going to try out for the Women's Olympics.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be that good. I love rowing. I like running. I'm a very slow and steady type of girl. You will not see this girl in this body run in sprints anytime soon because it just doesn't work that way. I will tell you my least favorite is I hate burpees. I cannot stand them. I refuse to do them if I can. I hate burpees. I don't know if I said that. I hate burpees.
I mean, well, it's all about, I mean, the way to be successful is to find what you enjoy doing. And the great thing about exercise these days is it doesn't all just look like one thing. Mm. And we have the opportunity to try so many things and to figure out what we do and don't like. Like, you know, if I was your trainer and you looked at me and you were like, Danielle, I freaking hate burpees like so much that I will be miserable the entire time. I mean, there's a difference between literally hating them versus just like not really liking them maybe because they're not your thing. You know, it's nice to be able to find what motivates you to move because that's how you're going to continue wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm. And okay, let me just do full disclosure of why I hate burpees. Okay? Because I'm not the only one in this world. One, you have to like jump down. And when you do that and you're big chested girls, you almost give yourself black eyes, right? Two, you have to go into a squat position to kick out your legs. I've had a child. The bladder ain't what she used to be, folks. Yep. And so you might like tinkle yourself. Then you have to shoot your legs back up and then jump up again. And you repeat the cycle of your boobs almost knocking you out. It's just an ordeal. I hate it.
Right.
But the problem with a good trainer, though, is they see that and they're like, I'm going to push that little button today. Mm-hmm. I'm going to see how if I can get her past that. She's going to learn to love him. And that's what Erica on the show would do. Didn't work. I still hate it.
Right.
But I think you bring up a good point that in my mind, before I entered into this health and wellness journey, is I thought wellness and working out was very linear and that you had to do the same thing every day. And what I'm hoping to explore as soon as, you know, we get back on the right path and gyms open up is I want to bounce around and I want to try all these different things that are out there that I never had the confidence to go and try before. You know, I want to try to do a boot camp. I want to try to do like a gladiator thing. I want to try to do yoga. I want to try to do the silks. Yeah. I might pull the brackets out of the wall. I don't know. Like I want to do goat yoga. I've never done it. Like I'll try a stripper pole fitness or pole fitness. I've never done it, but we'll see it. Let's try it, you know? And I never would have done that before. And that's exciting.
Yeah.
And that's what will keep me going, I think, is you don't have to do the same thing over and over again. Mm-hmm. There's as long as you're moving your body.
Yeah.
That's what counts.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I mean, at least from a trainer's perspective, I really could not agree more. I mean, it should be an exciting thing and trying new things. And the world is so, the fitness world is so broad now. Like you said, I mean, I've never done the yoga silks or the acro yoga, and I've always wanted to try. And I've always wanted to try that stripper pole stuff too.
I mean, you don't have to strip, but
no, I know,
if I could throw this around a pole, man.
Well, you know, you learn some skills physically and then, you know, if you want to take them back home, that's your prerogative.
Right? It's so funny. I even saw somebody sent me a link one time to gardening yoga. And I'm like, what is that? And you did yoga in a garden and then you would do like the sunflower pose. I don't know if that's, you know, a thing or whatever. And you could like garden and work. It was the weirdest thing, but I'm like, I could be into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's a cool thing. You mentioned the goat yoga. Like there are a lot of cool things that you could do that'll connect you to like nature and outside and everything. Mm-hmm. You don't have to feel like you have to be locked in the four walls of a gym.
Yeah, definitely. That's the biggest thing right now with COVID. So many people, you know, their self-talk is, well, the gym's not open. It's not my fault. I can't go to work out. So I'm going to chill out in my PJs. And I've totally been that person. Like, I know I'm going to work out with Danielle the day before. And I'm like, oh man, I need to rest up. I need to eat some kale because she's going to kick my ass.
Right. I mean, I was there from March to May of this year. And you know what? It's okay to be there if you need to give yourself a moment.
Yeah.
But then you make an affirmative decision of, okay, I had my moment. Now what? And talk yourself out of it. And, you know, even if you have to give yourself a pep talk every day before you go to the gym, record it, replay it. And that's been the most motivating thing is if we had to put an end cap on this conversation, it's that take the damn pictures now.
Right.
Write down what motivates you now, mm-hmm. and take those pictures and take the motivational words of encouragement and continue doing it, because there's going to be days where you don't want to get up. But if you can see something tangible that makes you want to say, you know what, I've come this far, let's go a little bit more, or look how far I've come, I can keep doing this, do it. And I'm telling you, for me, that's motive, that's pictures. That was watching myself on TV being like, holy crap, like, I've come so far. I did that.
Yeah.
Let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah.
Well, that is a perfect way to end it. And I know, Christy, that you spoke that an upcoming project for you will be those lives that you're going to start in January, mm-hmm. Which sounds super interesting. Do you have anything else going on in that regard, or anything that we could keep an eye out for?
Yeah. So we're in January with our licensed dietitian from the show. Her name's Katie Chapman. We're going to start doing First Fridays, where the first Friday of every month, we're going to have like an hour long chat on live where people can submit questions that they might have for her. The first one, we're going to just show what our meeting is like with the dietitian, because people think dietitians, they're going to tell me what I need to eat and what not to eat. That's not the case. I think a good dietitian starts off, okay, that sounds great, but why do you not want to address these foods? Why don't you want to eat this? Why are you eating more of this? And they start going down the emotional road, because emotions and food are so closely tied. That's why you have a gut reaction. Mm-hmm. Your gut tells you a lot of things before your head and your heart do. And there's a reason that emotions and food are tied so closely, because if you're feeling anxious, you might eat. If you're feeling sad, you might not eat, you know,
right.
That's getting to those, the origins, like you said, that are super important for anybody's successful relationship with food, whatever that might look like. And so I hope that we can demystify what it looks like to work with a licensed dietitian. We can demystify what a plan of nutrition and diet looks like. You know, all of these things that I don't think a lot of people tap into the resource that is a dietitian. And I would like for people to do so if they feel comfortable, because I have found a lot of success in it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for that. And where can, you know, you mentioned this was going to be on your Instagram. What is your Instagram handle so that people can find you and keep an eye out for those first Fridays?
My Instagram handle is Christy with the good hair _ between each word. So Christy _ with _the_ good _hair. And it's a lot of words, but it's funny because Bob Harper from the show, he gave me that nomenclature. Every time I stepped on the scale, he'd be like, there's Christy with the good hair. And it never made it to TV, which is completely fine. But that's just kind of what my name was around set.
Well, I have actually been waiting to ask you to say it out loud, because I just wanted to say that you do have really beautiful hair. Like,
we're both very envious.
I saw your Instagram handle and I was like, she is Christy with the good hair.
Well, thank you. And, you know, shout out to Beyonce, because, you know, she started with Becky with the good hair. I'm following line.
Well, this has been so enjoyable, and I'm going to let Paula close it off, but I just personally wanted to say thank you so much for sharing it. And you just seem like such a beautiful person inside and outside. And I just wish you just all the continued goodness and to just keep on this journey, because it's a beautiful one to be able to now watch now that we know you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And thanks everybody who is maybe listening in right now. And it's so great to be able to come together in the time of COVID to connect in this way. And, you know, we really appreciate you being on the show. And just as a reminder, any ideas or topics discussed during this podcast should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.